This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
For a child star missing in London, hanging with a new crowd that dressed like the undead.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Modern Self-Protection Middle of the Week podcast here on the Handgun World podcast. Well, Ben Branham is normally the solo host of the Middle of the Week Modern Self-Protection episodes. He is going to be on. He did an interview with me, actually. It was sort of an answer to a listener's email. So that's coming right up. I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio right now just recording this introduction. And I'll also record the last part of the show, the conclusion, in just a few minutes. Before I bring Ben on to talk about XD pistols and also ported or compensated pistols, since that's pretty much the topic of this show. Ported or compensated pistols. Should you get them? Should you carry them? It's not a subject that I've covered before. Some announcements. The email is bob@handgunworld.com. Voicemail number 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. I'm going to address some of the emails, the voicemails, excuse me, in this episode, after Ben and I get done answering an emailer's question. I'm going to get to the voicemails that have recently been called in. I also want to let you know about the two-day event that we've got coming up, April 13th and 14th. Don't miss this one, folks. If you've got somebody that is a relatively new beginner into the handgun world, you know, scene, that's why I call this show Handgun World, because there's a lot of people entering the new world of handguns that we have, especially with the new environment, I guess. The new reality, as Glenn Tate put it a couple of months ago. The new reality that's kind of smacked us in the face, right? People are waking up. They're buying guns. They're prepping. They're doing things like storing food and getting their financial house in order. And they're, you know, starting to hoard stuff, I guess. I'm not really hoarding. I'm just kind of spreading it, you know, thin and preparing as much as I possibly can in many different ways. Some people call it hoarding. I don't. I just call it common sense preparedness. But, you know, this show is primarily about guns. And so if you want to listen to all that preparedness stuff and all that, check out my other podcast, Today's Survival Show. I talk all about that every single week. But the two-day event that we have coming up on the 13th and 14th of April, beginners class, the first day. The first day is a four-hour beginners class, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. It's Handgun 101. We take somebody who really has never spent much time shooting, and by the end of that 4 hours, we will have them up to speed. The next day, Sunday, April 14th, the day before tax day, is our Beyond Concealed Carry class. It's going to be in San Antonio at a place to shoot, the range that we like to use in San Antonio. So go to handgunworld.com, get signed up. If you want to take both, it's $199. If you just want to take one or the other, you'll see the pricing on the website. Just click two-day event at handgunworld.com. Many thanks to quite a few of you who have been signing up for the Shooters Club internet website that we have, the one-year membership where you get to watch all kinds of videos and audios. We're going to have a lot of video from the last Beyond Concealed Carry class that Ben and I taught. A lot of the footage that we taught in Dallas, we had a photographer there taking some videos, and we're going to put not all of it, of course, but some of it up on the Shooters Club site within the next couple weeks. If you're not a member, go to handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club page, and get signed up for your one-year membership. Also, last but certainly not least, don't forget Glenn Tate's book, the fifth book in his 299 Days series, is coming out shortly. As soon as it's out, I'll put a link on my recommended books website, the recommended books page on my website. If you want to get his book, if you've not read the first four books of 299 Days, wow, you are missing out on some common sense, no tinfoil hat stuff. You gotta read it. I've had Glenn interviewing on this show several times. Go over to handgunworld.com. My Amazon link, you'll help support my show by buying the book through my Amazon Associates link. Again, at the recommended books page at handgunworld.com. All right, let's get right into it. A listener recently sent in a pretty interesting email, and it was about a compensated or ported or compensated handgun. So here we go. Ben and I had a chance to answer and give this guy a response. Stay tuned. Well, I'm with Ben Branham, and we are getting ready to go out and get some barbecue food because it's the night before Beyond Concealed Carry on March 2nd. But I wanted to get him together here to talk about a message that I got from John in Detroit, actually in Warren, Michigan, regarding compensated pistols. So, Ben, you ready?
Sure. We got it right here.
All right. I'll go ahead for the listener's benefit, and I'll read John's question, and we'll get to it. John writes, "Hey, Bob, this is John from Warren, Michigan. I'd like to get your and Ben's opinion on compensated pistols. Do you think they're only appropriate in heavier recoiling guns, or can they be beneficial in smaller calibers also? I'm looking at the Glock 19C, but not sure if it's a good thing to do or if I should just stick with the normal Glock 19. He also asks for our impression on the Springfield XDs. But let's talk about the compensated pistols question first. What do you think?
What a question. Compensated pistols are awesome for gaming, I think. Not so great for self-defense. So it depends on what you want the pistol for. If you want to go hunting or just shoot a, well, you can't shoot IDPA with a compensated pistol, but you can shoot a lot of other gaming events and three gun and all that other stuff. If you want one of those, they're awesome. Because what a compensator does is it pushes gas up, and then in rifles it pushes it to the rear too to keep the weapon from recoiling or moving during recoil. Well, that's great. And part of the compensator too is you got to find the right load. Some of them will, if you have a compensated pistol, you actually shoot a light load and it may vent gas too much up, and you actually, the pistol might be actually pushed down instead of up. So you got to kind of find that right medium if you're shooting a compensated pistol, so when you shoot it, the muzzle doesn't move and you just get a light rock back and it keeps it right on target. That sounds like a great idea. The only problem is for self-defense and stuff, you have a bunch of hot burning gases vented up instead of out. So if you pull the gun in close to yourself and shoot it, you're going to get a face full of this stuff. And
yeah,
a lot
kidding.
Of us, I mean, I wear my sunglasses all the time, but during night, we don't wear safety glasses or anything. And if you get in a shootout at night and you have to pull that gun close to you to make that shot, and now you take a shot and now you're not wearing your glasses, you could very well blind yourself or have a piece of burning powder stick on your eyeball, and you have all sorts of issues. I won't even pretend to tell you where that can go, but I know it's not going to be good. The other one you get is you can use this stuff to really almost cut metal with so hot and burning it so fast. So if you have your arm over the top or your hand over the top of the gun where this stuff comes out, it's going to eat up flesh and it's going to burn through flesh and go down to your bone. It could hurt a very, very lot. And you can do just as much damage, if not more, to yourself than actually to the person you're trying to defend yourself against.
That would hurt. That would hurt.
So, and then you said your Glock 19, if you learn to shoot your Glock 19 right, it will have almost zero recoil to begin with. I think the compensator is overkill in a 9mm unless you're really doing the sport game where you're going to put the weight out on front of the gun and the full compensator out there. The Glock, I think the 19C that Glock is making is almost, I don't know.
I think it's kind of a waste.
Yeah, a couple people asked for it, so Glock made it because it was super cheap and easy for them to do it, and they charge a premium for it.
Yeah.
On a true gaming gun, you'll see that the compensator is screwed onto the end of the barrel. It puts a weight up there. It helps with the recoil. A weight on your gun helps with the recoil. And then it vents gases down. It vents gases up and to the side, and some of them are even adjustable on rifles now. It's a huge science. And it's really cool, actually, if you get into it, about how it all works and the flow rates and pressures and all this other stuff. And I'm just starting to scratch the surface on the actual science behind all this stuff. It's really exciting in rifles, especially the big heavy ones. You said in heavy revolvers or heavy recoiling guns, it is nice to shoot a .454 Casull or a .500 Smith & Wesson with a with that big compensator on the end. It helps from beating you up a lot.
I'd like to shoot one of those.
Well, I got a chance to shoot a couple of those. And, man, those things can beat you up. They're, you know, the pistol fires and it rocks back like cartoon style, wants to hit you in the head almost on some of these things. So on those, the compensator is really helpful, but I wouldn't be carrying a .454 Casull or a .500 Smith & Wesson unless I was defending myself against a bear.
Yeah, no kidding.
So,
well, you know, Ben, you brought up the point earlier about the flames coming up through the compensator. You know, John, I want you to try this. Try it with an uncompensated pistol first, okay? Shoot from retention. Get up close to the target and just put that pistol right along your side in what we call the retention position and fire three shots. Now imagine you have a compensated pistol and imagine those flames and those gases coming right up into your face. A lot of people,
You'll definitely feel that.
Yeah, you'd feel that. Yeah. And that's, and you know what? In a lot of gunfights, you could very well find yourself shooting from retention.
Or in a weird position, let's say seated in your car and you're right-handed and you pull your gun and you have to stick it towards the window.
Right.
The gun is almost at your face.
Right.
And you're just barely out the window.
That's a good point.
And now you're, so, and then inside too, also, anytime you don't put those gases forward and they're going in any other direction, the sound bounces a lot. So part of the problem with shooting a compensated rifle is the rifle is going to be like 10 times louder to the shooter than without the compensator.
Yeah, the noise is another negative of compensated pistols. The other thing is a lot of people tend to buy a compensated gun in .40 caliber, .357 caliber, .45. Well, think about it. That's an even bigger flame. Those rounds are very hot loaded, especially a 357 SIG. I saw a guy one time on a forum that said he bought a 357 SIG compensated pistol. I thought, holy cow, that thing must have one heck of a fireball coming out the top of the barrel after he shoots it.
It would be an awesome IPSC gun.
Because
you're shooting major caliber.
Yeah.
And you still got the little 9mm.
For competition, yeah.
So you just want to think about that, and I'm sorry, don't quote me on the 10 times louder. I just know that if you fire a rifle with a compensator on it, it's a lot louder than if you don't.
Well, yeah, any pistol is louder, too.
And anything that pushes those gases. And then, remember, if you're true self-defense and you're going to defend yourself in your house, those sounds are amplified a lot off of those close walls, and it's going to be even louder and louder and louder. And I don't use a compensated rifle as my home defense gun for that reason. I may not have time to put on ear pro. And if you shoot one of these compensated rifles in a closed area without ear protection on, it will ring your chimes. I've done it hunting by mistake.
You'll lose your hearing. You won't be able to listen to our podcast anymore.
Well, even more than that, it flat out, when I used my compensated rifle over the top of a truck and I got the sound bounced off the top of the truck and back at me, and it was enough to ring my chimes to, like, I have to shake the cobwebs out enough. It's bad, really bad. So inside it's going to be a lot worse. So compensated guns for self-defense, I think it's a big negative. For games, go for it and find that sweet load. Tell me what your load is and how it works and how you like it, and hey, have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, for competition. Okay, John's other question is, if you could give your impression on the Springfield XDS. You know, Ben, you and I were talking about that gun a couple hours ago. And the Springfield XDS, isn't that what the question is? Springfield XDS?
I don't know if it says XDs or XDS. Sorry, John, we'll give you an opinion on both of them.
Yeah, both of us have shot a Springfield XDS. So let's talk about that one first.
The XDS, if you want, that's a little .45 subcompact. If you want a .45 and a subcompact that you can pocket or you can get really hide real well, I'm all for it. That was a great little gun. It shot well. I was amazed on how little recoil it had for such a small little gun. Even with my big mitts, I liked it better than the Springfield, your gun, the Springfield, the Shield.
Not the Smith & Wesson Shield.
Smith & Wesson Shield. I like the grip texture on it. I liked how it felt in my hand. I like how it shot better. And the XDs all around, I kind of like them. But that XDS...
Now, we might have a little pause there, but I can maybe edit part of that pause. I got a phone call in the middle of it, but anyway, go ahead.
So that little XDS, if you really want something, a .45 that you can pocket, I think it's the way to go. I really enjoyed shooting it. The sights were right on. It wasn't hard to make hits. Trigger wasn't bad. The recoil was tameable, and the grip was comfortable.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I'll say, though, about the Springfield XDS, for me, anyway, with the short magazine that's flush to the bottom of the grip, I had way too much of my hand hanging off the grip.
It depends. And then the problem is when I put the extended magazine in there, then the grip was so long, it was about as long as my Glock 19. So I thought, well, what's the purpose? The only advantage I see of the XDS is that it is thin, single stack. It's very, very thin. As a matter of fact, it might even be thinner than my Smith & Wesson Shield. So it's a good shooting gun. Ben, let me ask you a question. That short little barrel of the Springfield XDS shooting a 45 ACP can't be much velocity with that little round, or with that big round, that little gun, is there?
I don't know. I'd have to put it over a chrono, but that's a good question.
I'd be concerned about the velocity.
For me, with the 45, I wouldn't. Whatever comes out, it comes out, and it's that big, dumb round that's just trucking out there.
Yeah, but you may only have 700 feet per second or something.
It's trucking out there at 700 or 850, it may not make that big a difference for expansion and everything else. Little guns, when you come into a 5-inch barrel on the lightweight rounds, is where you're really going to... So something in 9mm or 380 where you've got a 100-grain bullet that's tracking out there, that might be a huge difference in a 2-inch to a 5-inch barrel.
Would you drop 45. Down to 185-grain 45 in a small gun like that?
No, I'm still a big believer in the 230, in the 230? Because yeah. of the heritage of the round. It was designed around the 230-grain bullet. It was designed to stop people back in the Philippines in the early 1900s. The round was developed just to put people down. And 230 grains has worked for 100 and some odd years now.
Okay.
I'll stick with what works and what I've seen work. And I know it's a little bit of myth and lore about that and stuff. But I just kind of feel like when I get a 45, any 230-grain round that I can shove in there that'll work, I feel confident in.
What's your impression of the Springfield XD line of pistols overall?
I really like them. I think they're more comfortable than the Glock to shoot, and they're more comfortable to hold. I don't understand totally the back safety, grip safety.
Grip safety? Yeah.
I like it, and I dislike it at the same time. I like it to holster the gun because it's kind of an on and off switch. I can move my hand, and then I have that extra safety on there. I'm not really sure why they put it in there, but... It doesn't really affect me at all because once I get a good grip on that gun, I'm good to go. I just like how it feels in my hand better. I like their sights that come in factory guns better. I actually like the trigger better. It just seems like my Glock, I gotta put that 1,000-round trigger job on my Glock at least to get a decent trigger out of it. And the XD comes right out of the box like that. It's kind of big and clunky when you start out, but maybe that's just me because I started out with a Ruger P89 9mm that was like trying to shoot a brick. So I like the big and clunky feel, and I like the big, huge sights, and I like how they stand up because it's kind of a high muzzle bore axis. So
that's my only negative of those guns is it's a very tall bore axis. I like the lower bore axis where the Glock barrel is sitting right down into the crease of my hand. I like that.
Yeah.
I've shot a lot of XDs. I used to have an XD45. I actually could not control it as well as I could control the Glock 45.
I didn't do the direct 45, but I did the 9mm comparison, and I didn't really see a difference between the XD and the Glock for recoil. I did like how the high bore axis put the sights up higher.
Yeah, it does put the sights up higher, yeah.
It made me more confident in picking up the sights, and it made it easier to shoot. It's one of those guns that I might consider going to if I ever get rid of my Glock. They're kind of fun, and there's the whole line of them, and then you have the XDM line that's a whole line. Which is kind of a cool thing. The only here's the quirk in the gun. They have those stainless steel magazines that work beautifully, super thin, slick as glass, until you drop them in the dirt a couple times. If you drop them in the dirt two or three times to five times, you got to pick them up and clean them. It's almost like, hey, we were talking about running IP6 guns earlier. Those guys will clean their magazines between stages. You almost got to do that with those guns to keep them running. That's the one quirk of the gun. If they could get rid of that little quirk and the magazines would run dirty, the gun is almost infallible. They just run and run and run as long as you keep those magazines clean.
Yeah. The only other negative I could see, this is a small negative. This might be nitpicking a little bit. But with that grip safety, if you can't get an ideal grip on the gun, you can't fire it. Same is true with the 1911. If you can't get an ideal grip on the gun, you can't fire it. Whereas with a revolver, a Glock, an M&P that doesn't have any kind of a grip safety or thumb safety, no matter what kind of a grip you have, you can fire the gun.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, that might be nitpicking. I've never had the problem either. But if you can't get a completely good draw, In other words, maybe if your hand is, you know, starting to slide off, but the guy's on top of you, your hand's starting to slide off the grip, but you still need to put a round into his chest when he's laying on top of you, I could see it could be an issue.
Yeah.
Who knows, you know?
And that might be personalization too, John. If you like the XDs,
yeah,
try them and try them and try them. You know, just play with it at the gun shop. If you ever have, even once, if you have it fail to not go click when you're playing with it because that grip safety wasn't depressed all the way, that is not the gun for you.
Yeah.
If you're playing with it and it always works and it's not a big problem. For me, it wasn't a big deal because you don't have to push it in all the way. You just have to get it moving.
It's the one thing I like the grip safety on the XDs better than on a 1911. Definitely. I like it because you barely have to even touch that grip safety on the XDs. I've noticed that.
That's true. On the 1911s, a lot of guys put in on my 1911. I have a I don't pin it. I put a memory bump on mine.
Yeah, exactly.
On the beaver tail grip safety, and there's kind of a memory bump, which means there's a bump on the back to make that safety go in all the way, so I don't have to worry about it not going off. But hey, it's to each his own. I think XD Springfield's making a great gun out of Croatia.
Fine pistols.
It used to be an HS 2000 back in 2000
for a lot less money. But they're excellent pistols. I'm not trying to knock them, and I agree with you, Ben. Their XD triggers are far better than the Glock triggers out of the box. I mean, you know, we all know Glock triggers can be improved nicely, but out of the box, that XD feels like somebody gave it a 1,000 round trigger job.
Yeah, and I've just always liked them. It's just that I was issued a Glock originally. That's why I have them. When I was going to go from a 1911 to a striker-fired pistol, that was my first choice, was to go actually to an XD 9mm. So
yeah.
You're kind of thinking like I think, John. I really like them. And the prices of them are like $500. You probably can't go wrong with them. If you like them, carry them.
In today's market, they might be $600.
Oh, that's true.
Well, John, thanks for the email. And Ben, thanks for your time. Let's go eat.
Cool.
All right. Okay, thank you, Ben. Be sure to check out his podcast, the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. Well, I got some voicemails, so here we go. I'm going to close out this middle-of-the-week episode by answering some listener voicemails.
Hey, Bob, this is David from out in California. I had a quick question I don't think I've ever heard anybody address. When considering concealed carry garments and holsters and your pistol, is there a difference in the colors that you might suggest between black, stainless, or flak darker, or in a holster, whether you choose black or leather, brown, or maybe an FDE? You know, if you're carrying with an untucked shirt and inside the waistband, one might think that a flak darker gun might blend into your body, just in the event that an accidental exposure. I know that you've talked quite a bit about that in regard to Texas law, but I don't know that anybody's ever talked about the color of your garments, or not necessarily the garments, but your equipment. So thought I'd throw that out there and see if we can respond to that. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Well, Dave, thanks for the voicemail. That's somewhat of a related topic, since earlier, Ben and I were addressing the guy's question about the type of pistol to carry. Since this is kind of similar, let me throw that in here. I think it's more of a matter of personal preference, Dave. And you know, I wear undershirts when I conceal carry. When I wear an untucked shirt, I wear an undershirt. Usually, my undershirt is black. Sometimes it's white, but most of the time it's black, or it's a dark color, green color, sometimes a gray color. I just like black pistols, and I like black holsters and black belts. Black looks smaller, and that's kind of one reason why I like black. And, you know, when I have a black holster, it kind of blends in with the black belt and the black gun, and it all kind of blends in, and it looks smaller. The flat dark earth, I guess, is okay. Stainless, well, I have a stainless steel 1911. I don't have any problem carrying that. Because my cover garment is untucked, it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. Here's what I think makes more of a difference than the actual gun color. Because in my personal opinion, the gun color, if it's an untucked cover garment, doesn't seem to make a whole lot of difference. What makes a whole lot of difference is the color of the cover garment. I like to wear patterns. I like to wear either dark-colored shirts or shirts with patterns. Patterns break up the outline
of the handgun and the holster and the clips and everything. It breaks it up nicely. I think that's even more important than the actual color of the gun itself. So once again, doesn't seem to make too much of a difference in terms of the color. I just happen to like the black guns. My second choice would be the stainless steel, and my third choice would be the flat dark earth, to specifically answer your question. But again, just as important, if not more importantly, the color and the pattern of your outer garment that's actually covering up the handgun. I think more important patterns, any kind of, you know, checkered pattern or anything that kind of distracts the eye from the shape of the pistol. And, you know, it shouldn't be printing that much. But if you are printing a little bit, try the darker colored shirts or the patterned shirts and see if that makes a difference. Hey, thanks for the voicemail. I appreciate it.
Hey, Bob, Joe from Northeast Texas again. Calling about episode 186. As you know, I'm more of a prepper than a shooter, I guess. I mean, we have guns, but we're a prepper group. I wanted to say that is an awesome episode, 186. I've just been going back to a bunch of your episodes that I hadn't heard yet on both the prepper side and the handgun world side. I'm an information sponge for all the stuff that you're talking about and teaching. That's a bunch of great information. In there, in episode 186, it was Roger Phillips was talking about how most of the gunfights happen at night, not during the day. I understand that. And in the military, they taught us to plan for the worst and pray for the best. And that really came out evident in that podcast. It was awesome. I'm going to get with my guys, and we're going to start incorporating a little more night shooting, just train on that and start working with that. I just want to say again, it's been great. Keep going with all the podcasts. I wait weekly for the next podcast to come out on either side, the prepper side or the gun side. I do 3 to 5 hours a day in my truck. So I don't listen to the radio. I listen to Bob Main. This is what I do every day. So I appreciate it. But like I said, I'm an information sponge for everything you're putting out. And I've been going back through and just doing everything I can to see what's next. What else can Bob show me? So I appreciate it. Keep up the good work. And thank you much, sir. Bye.
Thanks, Joe. He's talking about episode 186 of the Handgun World podcast, where I interviewed Roger Phillips from Suarez International on low-light gunfighting, or gunfighting at night, since it is a fact that most gunfights do happen either in low light or at night. But what do? We practice during the daytime, and we seldom practice at night, so you may want to consider. Now, I have not taken a low light class yet. That's on my bucket list to take here pretty quick, is to take a low light gunfighting class, specifically from Roger Phillips at Suarez International. I'm probably gonna have to do some traveling for that one. But go back and listen to episode 186 if you haven't. That was back in July of last year. I recorded that with Roger Phillips. You know, here's a closing thought to this episode that Joe made me think about with this voicemail. My closing thought that I want to leave you with is this. There seems to be a lot of people that poo-poo point shooting. They kind of put it down as if it's not a real viable gunfighting tactic. And they say, well, you know, sighted fire is the best. And, you know, they say that point shooting is spray and pray, and that it's, you know, and that it's a fraud, and that you do too much missing and stuff like that. Well, if you're a big proponent of sighted fire, my question to you is, what's going to happen in a reactive gunfight in low light? Now, you might say, well, I got night sights on my pistol, Bob. Yeah, you got night sights, but those little green dots are, you know, for some people, it could be a little difficult to line those up, even if they're something like excess big dots. And then what's going to happen if you can't get to your sights? Gunfights are very, very quick, real quick. I mean, you could be talking split seconds. You could be talking a half or even a third of a second to react. And you may not be able to get on your sights, okay? And there's a lot of movement involved. There's a lot of moving and shooting. And getting a good clean sight picture just might not be all that possible. You don't know. It's another tool. That's what I want to leave you with. It's another tool. So I kind of question the motive of anybody that would encourage you not to put another tool in your toolbox with point shooting. Think about it. It's another tool in your toolbox. Don't you like to have as many tools and skills? You know, if you only know one way to do something, what is that? Think about that. If you build something, wouldn't you like to know more than one way to build that? More than one way to skin a cat? If you're focused on just one method, which is sighted fire, what if it's your life on the line? We're talking about your life on the line, folks. This is why learning things like low-light gunfighting and point shooting and things like that, adding those tools to your toolbox to make you a well-rounded shooter if that awful day comes. And, you know, we all hope that day doesn't come. You know, it's amazing how much money we spend on guns and ammo and training and things like that, all in preparation for a day we hope never happens. Isn't that interesting? But we are talking about our lives, are we not? And when we're talking about our lives, I think you might want to be as prepared as you possibly can. So once again, I question the motives, and so glad question the motives of people who put down things like point shooting or low light night gunfighting and things like that. So Joe, thanks very much for your voicemail. Thanks for being a loyal listener. I appreciate that. Be careful. Don't listen to too much of me. It could be hazardous to your mental health. Oh, it's flattering to get these kinds of voicemails from you guys, but, you know, I'm just a regular guy talking about my passion. That's really when it comes down to it, that's really all I am. And I have fun with it, and you keep listening, so I'm going to keep on doing it. With that said, I'm going to go ahead and close out this middle of the week MSP Modern Self-Protection Podcast. Thanks again to Ben Branham and to those of you who sent in the voicemails. And I'll catch you on Sunday with the regularly scheduled weekly episode. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. The loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click. Or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight.
If you're jumping bail, you know he's gonna find you. So you better figure out where you're gonna run to. Where you gonna run to now? Hunt in the jungle, he got snakes on a plane. The bounty.